Hey gang, welcome to Dateline Louisiana, a provocative look at the deepest of the deep southern states. Thoughts that are informative, candid, humorous, and sometimes controversial about life in one of the most interesting and rabble-rousing states in the nation. Here are your hosts, Rhonda Gray and Jim Brown.
Hey, welcome to our show. I'm Jim Brown with Rhonda Gray right here. Rhonda, we've got another lively show today, don't we?
This is one I've been looking forward to. Yeah, it's a topic that gets me fired up.
I'll bet. This is a week in this period that is acknowledged every week, that is recognized every week. It's kind of anti-book banning week. Is that correct? That we've talked this before.
Or in a positive way, we could say read banned books week. We could add that to it. So if it's banned books week, September 18th through 24th, sponsored by the American Library Association. So I think they want you to read them.
Well, I think what's unfortunate is that while we come up to celebrate this book week, we're finding that there are many books that are being banned. Here we're in 2022, approaching 2023, and we're banning books. And, you know, I have these images of libraries being burnt in World War II in Nazi Germany. I can't recall any time in the last 50 or 60 years we were talking about banning books. You'd go to the library, and I mean, we're talking about, you look, we're not talking about pornography or anything like that, but we're talking about books like To Kill a Mockingbird, one of the great Southern novels by Herbert Lee about segregation in the South. It's just a classic, and yet that is being banned in a number of libraries all over the country. A Catcher in the Rye, J.D. Salinger, a marvelous book that I read when I was a young teen. I loved that book. It encouraged me to go ahead and read more, and that's being banned. And we'll talk about why, but I think To Kill a Mockingbird, there was some, the N-word was used throughout the book, which was a reflection of how a lot of people talked back in the 30s and the 40s and up until probably 15, 20 years ago. But that caused the book to be banned because of the N-word. Catcher in the Rye has some language there, I think. Diary of Anne Frank.
Right.
Diary of Anne Frank, which is, I've seen the motion picture. I've read the book on several occasions. I've told the story to my 6-year-old and 4-year-old grandkids. And yet that's on the list of books being banned, language and
The Color Purple, another classic that's
And some of these books have some sexual overtones where a young girl is coming to grips with her sexuality. And I mean, I'm not saying you sit there and read that aloud to a 5-year-old, but I think when you're – do you ban a book like that from the library altogether? I've some people say absolutely no censorship whatsoever, because I know we have a friend, Butch Aswell, that runs a publication and has published a number of books out in Livingston where this is parish, which this is a hot issue right now. And he says, no, we shouldn't burn books or the ban books or have a separate section. We've just got to have freedom, and parents need to have that responsibility. That's his approach he takes to it.
Well, he's in a parish in Louisiana that became national news over a argument with a middle school librarian, a young woman named Amanda Jones, who spoke up against banning books to their library board, and she was just viciously attacked online, and a big campaign against her, calling her a pervert and all kinds of craziness. Because she had the courage to speak up there in Butch's hometown, and that's happening all across the country.
Well, I know I've read where cities in Michigan, cities out in smaller towns out west, are defunding the libraries altogether. And I guess, you know, my having 4 kids, I've had raised 3 daughters, I could guess I can understand that a 6- or 7-year-old to be exposed to too much sexual content in the book, even heavy language, would be something if they were confronted by something like that. It seems like to me reasonable that if there are books that, and you know, we are a republic in America. We don't set national standards for all we do. Each state under our Constitution, whether some people like it or not, have the right to make their own laws and set their own tone. And we elect our school boards. And I think that, maybe the school board should set some standards. The librarian, not maybe ban the book, but put them in a separate section of the library where, you know, a six-year-old would not be reading something with a lot of heavy pornography. Not pornography.
Right.
There's no pornography shouldn't be allowed.
Right.
But or the awakening of teenagers with some sexual overtones.
But, Jim, it's not like we have a group of rogue school librarians going out and finding racy books to put on the shelves. I mean, these books are carefully selected, and schools buy through National Library Association approved books and recommended books. And this is really parents trying to take over the education of their children, which some think they should, but without any input from the professionals. I mean, we talked about a lot of the classics that are still being banned. Like you said, To Kill a Mockingbird and Lord of the Flies, which was required reading for me, still being banned. But now they've moved into, I think, race is a huge driver in this. If you look at the books that they're banning, 41% of them this year had a protagonist or a major character who was a person of color. And so there's some disagreement with how that story is told. And then the next issue.
Well, let's stop right there now in terms of the race that you're talking about. Of course, the parent who is very protective of the child, depending on how the minority, majority, black, white issues are handled, may be objectionable to a parent raising their child. So what should that parent do? Let's say, look, the parents, because The 41% was not the percentage 10 years ago, 15 years ago. There's been a dramatic increase in the number of publications that deal with the racial issue that's been so divisive in this country, and there should be a full discussion. But if a parent has some real concerns about a young child and saying that, because when you get into that 41%, you're talking often about benefits to a minority, giving additional benefits, additional scholarships, additional help in school.
I don't think that's necessarily being discussed in the middle school books, though. That might be what the parent's driving thought is. But I would say to that parent, well, then tell your child, bring your library books home and let me look at them and go over them with you to see if I think these are good choices you made. I would not say to that parent that they have a right to say that the black children in the public schools can't have access to stories that they relate to and that tell about their heritage and their stories. I mean, I think that's where people are getting riled up, is when we are having school boards and library boards want to dictate, not go dictate to your own children, definitely, but not what the public has a right to see. This is really censorship, and books should bring us together and in positive discussions. It shouldn't be a divisive thing.
Well, but as I say, often the social issues or these divisive issues blend themselves in. For example, math. There's been over 40 different math books banned in the state of Florida. Some, I think, are complete overkill because I'm thinking, what on earth would math have to do? Well, it's the fact that, Johnny and his friend are gay, And they've got Billy Bob and his friend, or Billy and Jonah, who were African-American and Hispanic, and 2 and 4 and 6 equal what? You know, is that necessary when you're teaching something like math? Is that a quotient? Do you bring in social issues into math problems? And that, because I looked into Florida because I wondered, good gosh, what would math have to do with these social issues? And they're brought in that way. Well, and so I guess should a school board say, no, we don't want to allow that. And if you don't like your school board member, you know, you vote them out of office, just like we're dealing with on the national level with issues like abortion and others. They're there. If you don't like them, then, and your senator voted to confirm judges that support these issues, you vote the senator out, or you vote no up to the senator. But how far, again, I go back to the local quotient, to where you've got a school board and you've got norms in some parts of the country that are different norms in other part of the country. So do you have a uniform standard? Are you arguing that there should be no local control and decision-making on the part of school boards, principals, over what the librarian can or cannot do?
Well, you're talking about librarian, and you're talking about textbooks are two different things, too, where a math textbook is something that's being taught by a teacher in a classroom. And again, it's not like you have rogue teachers who go down to the corner bookstore and buy some math books. These math books are all approved by state departments of education, and they're told what to use. They go through a process, and then we have somebody that's elected to a school board just because they're hot that their kid read something that they don't agree with. Well, address it with your child, but the whole idea of banning books from other people who are interested in that topic. Interesting that you brought up the math book having the example of the gay kids, because after having a character of color, the next largest category of books being banned, 33% this year in 2022, are books that have to do with LGBTQ themes. And I recognize that's sensitive, but there ought to be a place in the library that those kids that are interested in learning about that can learn about that. We can't wall off our children from learning about gay people or people of color. I mean, it's just anti-education, not just anti-books.
Are you saying then everything goes in the library? You don't agree there should be, the library could put certain levels of books into a separate section where if the parent objected, there could be some control there. And I know you get into the logistics of all that, but you know, we are an evolving culture. Look, there's, you mentioned so many things that, you know, Barack Obama, when he was a senator, said he was opposed to gay marriage.
That's right.
Now here's someone looked as our most liberal president in the history of America, and he's opposed at the time to gay marriage. He has changed that view, as have a number of people, a number of prominent people and friends you and I know that had some reserves or some question, but have changed their view along those lines. And so, you know, you got the struggle within the Catholic Church right now over the whole gay issue. And I would project that in the next 15 years, that's going to change, and there will be acceptance of gay marriage. I just think it's something that's inevitable, and that then it becomes choice for you. If you don't like that position, you can not get married within the church or take a different stand for yourself. But I guess my point is we are evolving, and one size does not fit all. And, you know, we live in a state in Louisiana, and we're going to get into that in a future show about the changing moral focus as to interesting article about that I read, I think, in the New York Times recently about how on earth can evangelicals support Donald Trump with his lifestyle and everything like that. And we'll talk about that, but I think there's a changing culture. And for some people who, and it's not like they're bullheaded to set in their ways. They're comfortable in their ways. There are people up where you were raised in a small town in Mississippi, and where I spent a good part of my life in the small town of Faraday, Louisiana, who are very comfortable in their lifestyle and things they believe in. And one of the challenges to them is it seems like there's a lot of changes going on, and
right.
they don't like those changes.
They can't handle them. But schools are a little different place, and schools are where we count on those problems as they come up and solutions being worked out and taught and kids brought along. Again, we've got a structure in place. It seems like if you have a problem with some books, there's a process, a textbook or a library, there's a process of influencing that without running out and banning books on a local level. Hundreds of books taken off. Tennessee, one library took 300 books off the shelves because the legislature passes some laws that LGBTQ issues can't be discussed. Well, seriously, these kids, how do they learn? I mean, I guess I'm looking to parents. Of course, beyond the issue of gay issues, sexuality in general is your third big category that books are being banned based on. That's, parents' responsibility, obviously, to address that at home. But at some point, kids that aren't getting that at home, it's a good idea for them to be taught age-appropriate information. And then, of course, discussion of race and racism is the fourth big category that you talked about. But if you take between a protagonist, over 40% being banned because a protagonist is a person of color, and 20-something percent being banned because there's some discussion of racism, we've got a country that 62-63% of the books being banned are over race. What more proof do we need that we need to be having a dialogue on this subject? And what better place to have that dialogue than in a learning environment? Libraries, schools, those sort of places.
Well, like I say, I think that you and I have dealt with these issues in philosophical debates. You know, I guess one of the most active debate processes I've ever participated in was the Oxford Union when I went to school over, I'm sort of the Cambridge Union. Oxford has a debating society and Cambridge does too. And you openly debate and make huge preparations for these decisions in terms of what works and what doesn't work in the world today, the way the world is moving. And so, again, I think that you and I have debated these issues in a university setting. I've taught history in universities. You've been involved in teaching about a variety of subjects all over America. And I guess my question is that easy for you to say, a Catholic-raised child in up in Northeast Louisiana, whose parents say, no, I don't want my 8-year-old dealing with sexuality or dealing with gay issues, I'll reconsider when they're up in high school. Now, the flip side of that is, well, the child may go ahead and learn anyway from their friends and in other ways and may not be the healthy way to learn. And I understand that. But do you take away the parents' right to inject and have that kind of input?
Well, how are other advanced countries handling this issue? I don't really hear about groups of parents storming school boards in other countries and taking books off of shelves. I don't hear that. So I'm inclined
But who's ordering the books off the shelves? By legislative mandate? Again, I go back to the fact that we're a republic. We elect a legislature to go down and make laws, and often we disagree what those laws are, but that's the system.
Well, let me get on my soapbox about Lafayette, Louisiana, which is a great city to visit, very open-minded, lots of fun, entertainment, great tourist attraction, wonderful culture there. So they have a library board that decided they needed a process for banning books, and they appointed a committee made up of two people from the library and one from the library board. And this committee met in secret. Now, you, of all people, know a little bit about open meetings laws. And so those meetings were supposed to be public. And every lawyer affiliated with them told them the committee of the board has to meet in public and discuss this. They didn't do that. So they met, and the vote was generally 2-1. The two librarians said, no, I don't think this book should be banned. And the person representing the board, because they've had a lot of activist board members get themselves appointed to the board. So the board just decided, well, this isn't working. Let's vote, change the makeup of the committee. Two people appointed by the board, one by the library. And so now they're banning books right and left in secret, in secret. So when you talk about the process, we've got right here in our own state a process that's operating illegally. The public has a right to know. They're paying for the libraries to be built. They're paying for the books that are bought. They're paying for the books that are being taken off the shelves. And yet this board has gone rogue, as I said, and they're literally banning books.
Well, like you said, I was the author of the open meetings law in Louisiana, but that's not going to hold up. That challenge in court. I mean, you can't meet in secret to make decisions like that. There are some very specific reasons where you can go into executive session on personnel matters, that kind of thing. So that's not going to hold up. It was a huge mistake if you're going to have a review committee to have only three people. There's not no input there. There should be a committee of 8 or 10 people that might review certain aspects of the procedure they have, and they should have met in the open. And again, I'm concerned about parents who go to a school board and protest and often are looked on as insurrectionists. You know, the FBI has investigated certain parents that went to school board meetings and protested a procedure. You can't go to a school board meeting anymore and speak up without the goons from the FBI coming in and investigating you. So you got to reach a balance. There's got to be some, the parents in a public school, particularly if they're kind of stuck in the situation where they can't move their child. You know, there are no options. If you live in the metropolitan areas, you've got some options in terms of how you educate your child. But in rural areas, or if you are having a hard time making things meet financially, you don't have those options. You're stuck with the procedure. So I just don't want to be too hard on the parents who want to come and protest and say, look, I just don't want my child exposed like this. And it's a tough issue, and I wish I had the easy answer. And I mentioned our friend Butch Aswell, and I talked to him this week, and Tom is his name, and he writes his own column and has written several books. He says no book banning of any kind, because where are we going to go? We're going to start all of a sudden banning books about, like you said, books about race, and then we're going to ban any number of other books, and it just should be wide open. You work closely with me and our publishing company, the Lisbon Press. I publish books, and I'm for an open expression of authors that I work with, and I just don't think it should be 100%. You say, hey, I'm just stuck. Whatever the librarian wants to put for my child, I can't do anything about it. There needs to be a little bit more input in this day and age with the public. So,
Jim the mediator. Well, look, I'm on Tom Aswell's side, obviously, and being against banning books at all. But there's a school district in Texas, the Keller Independent School District, has been pulling books off of shelves as long as they were challenged by a parent. You talk about a process. Everybody seems to have their own process. So if parents complained about them, or a lawmaker complained about them, or someone in the community, they're like, okay, well, we're putting these books on review, which basically meant they got pulled off the shelf, including the Bible. I would venture to say most of the people who are upset about those LGBTQ books being pulled off of shelves would be equally upset about the Bible being taken away from a child that might want to read it and learn more about the Bible.
Well, 90% of the people on both sides of this, you've never read the Bible. On Sunday morning, you have, okay, here's our scripture reading. It's written down for you. You go ahead and read this. The Bible happens to be the most violent book I think I've ever read, where there's rape and incest and murder, often from the word of the Lord himself, talking about what should be done, where whole cities and are completely wiped off the map in terms of young children. So the Bible is a very violent book. I take credence in the fact that I've read the Bible, and I read certain sections every Sunday. I don't listen to the preacher. I just read certain sections, and my gosh, you think, how did this get by the censors? Well, the debate's going on for some time, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it today. And like I say, we've never seen this activist role on the part of parents, legislators, school board members. Just started recently. You know, we're supposed to be evolving as a society and amalgamating with different cultures coming into America. And maybe that's it. We can talk about this when we talk about exceptionalism. Maybe it's the fact, again, too many changes happening, too many things affecting people. Why can't I just do my job at work and come home and smoke a cigar?
No smoking.
curl up.
We've banned smoking.
That's right. Curl up on the front porch. Maybe have a little nip and just be left alone.
And what about all those people who majored in library science who thought they had the best job in the world? They would be reading great books in a quiet environment and talking to enlightened people, and now there's a group coming in with pitchforks and torches to their board meetings after them.
Well, I hope they don't come after the publishers. Well, listen, thank you folks for listening to us today. We talked about a controversial subject. If you have an opinion that you'd like to give on this subject, and we'll read these opinions on the air, you would go to Huey, at DatelineLouisiana.com. That's Huey at DatelineLouisiana.com. We'd like to hear from you, and we'll talk some more about this and other controversial subjects affecting Louisiana in the weeks to come. Glad you're listening to our podcast. Rana, you have a good week, and we'll talk again soon, won't we?
And in the meantime, go read more banned books. Thanks,
right.
Jim. Good talking to you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. And Rana Gray and Jim Brown here. Want to thank our producer who's on our show here, Chris O'Loughlin. Chris, thanks for your help. Take care, folks. We'll see you next week right here on Dateline Louisiana.
Thanks for listening to Dateline Louisiana with Jim Brown and Rana Gray. To subscribe to this podcast or contact Jim or Rana, visit DatelineLouisiana.com. We hope you'll join us again next week for more news and reflections from the Bayou State.